This is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. I do hope you have all had a nice break, and I would wish you all a very happy new year. And I have to say that the indications at the moment are that it should be quite exciting. In one of my messages, it did indicate that this was the year of change, and that has been confirmed in a number of others that have come through. Now, as usual, I would like to start with Sheldon Neidel's message for the spiritual hierarchy and the Galactic Federation. And as usual, I find it's full of good news and information. And I will start by mentioning that this message was one of reviewing last year's events and the way they proceeded, and then that was followed up by some of the expectations for this year. And Sheldon's message read that the first part of the galactic year, which is 2005, saw the foundation laid for a major American constitutional crisis to erupt in the first 6 months of this year, and that many individuals have come forward to testify to the massive misdeeds of the current administration. In turn, many major figures in Congress have asked for a general proceeding to begin that can ultimately result in a bill of impeachment against the American president. In addition, forces across the planet are closer to initiating a move to evict this present American regime. We in heaven are watching all this and dearly desire that the peace for the completion of these actions be accelerated. The goals of the dark remain the same. What has now changed is the amount of positive energy that is daily directed against them. That's, I think, wonderful news, and I have no doubt within my own mind that in the recent years there has been a great upswell of people sending out the light, positive thoughts, positive energies to help bring the changes in. Now, Sheldon's message goes on to say that there were some obstacles to events moving on in the way that were originally envisaged. And some of this was caused by the fact that the representatives of the Galactic Federation on and about our planet have not yet been permitted to openly interfere in our affairs. He says, we dearly want the last part of this present galactic year to witness the releasing at long last of our ships and personnel. To this end, we have drawn up a plan for the speedy implementation of the last part of our first contact mission. The start of this more overt scenario began 10 days before the last solstice. A series of secret meetings was held with our Earth allies and many friendly governments. Dates were formally introduced and a possible set of actions suggested to all parties. Now, that again is very interesting because, to my knowledge, Sheldon's messages are the only ones that refer to the type of meetings that are held with the Earth allies, and as he has put it, many friendly governments. And I think we're beginning to see a pattern emerge here where I personally would not be too surprised if, as the year develops, and particularly as the indictments start to come out, that we will see a collective of governments throughout the world come forward ready to impose these changes through the sheer power of their authority. That is what I think. But I may be wrong as far as the manner in which it will occur, but I feel very strongly, in light of many messages that have been received recently, that this is the year in which that action will take place. Now, the message goes on to say that talks are also ongoing with your ascended masters and the higher orders of heaven. And then goes on to say, talking about a series of quickening movements that are in process around the globe, that this can lead suddenly to catastrophes that can make events of the last 2 years seem trivial by comparison. And we are assured, as they say, this is not to be alarmist, but to emphasize the urgency for action on both our parts, as the various tectonic plates start to lock, thus reining in the usual geological subsidence process. Colossal repercussions can ensue. Message goes on to say that we are part of the love energy that set all spiritual and physical creation into motion, and follows on by saying that the Creator chose wisely and incorporated you into the very start of this entire process. This gives you a very great responsibility which reaches way beyond what lies before you now. You have the capability to unfold the divine plan. Because of this, your return to full consciousness has a number of important consequences. Thus it becomes essential that the present goings on be resolved positively, and the last denizens of the dark be gradually and grandly repulsed and then reformed. Monumental and wonderful change is now underway. The message goes on to say that first contact necessitates a certain degree of formal agreement on your world. And then goes on to say, we come here in the name of the light. We come to supervise heaven's transformation that is swiftly returning you to full consciousness. I read a bit further into the message that free will is conferred by degrees, with the fullest amounts reserved for the most highly conscious. I think that is understood as we bring more light into ourselves and raise our vibrations, and so we become more detached from the third dimension and the lower vibrations. And in doing that, we start to develop the higher consciousness. Now, the message goes on to say that slowly, those whose job it is to inform you are letting out smidgens of the truth, hence the recent intimations of how the present American regime has manipulated and spied on you to advance their cause. The present outcry is only the tip of the iceberg. Yet this provides a valuable lesson about the very nature of limited consciousness. The message confirms that they are ready to join us and assist us in returning this land to the light. And they say, listen within and allow the light to work in unison with you. And finally, the coming year holds much promise for change. Indeed, events are transpiring that can manifest our swift arrival on your shores. And that is all I have decided to mention from the last message from Sheldon Nidal. And part of the reason is that this is one of those occasions when we now have another message from Matthew, who I also hold in high esteem. I think with Sheldon's and Matthew's messages, you have a very good basis for judging other sources. And of course, we are reminded quite often to be sure of any channeling that we receive. Now, Matthew's message spoke about this new year. And he said, this new year is light years, if you will, ahead of all time in your recorded history, because of what was set in motion during the year just past. Your last year was pivotal in dislodging seeds of darkness, and 2006 will produce results that will be far-reaching. Some developments within the United States government are evident already, even in the media, as the line of dominoes grows in preparation for the last ones to fall harder. I find that interesting. That's not the first time that the fall has been referred to in that way. But I have to think to myself, in light of what is happening right now, that the fact that Abramoff has made a deal on the charges which have been put against him, and that deal evidently includes revelations about other people connected with the corruption charges, that this may in fact be the first domino to fall. I certainly feel there must be quite a number of other people that are associated with this person who must be very worried about what he will reveal. So, Matthew goes on to say, please bear with me in this repetition. Changes must first come in the United States, because that country is perceived by the world as the most powerful. I'm not saying that perception is wrong, because the US has become the most influential country in other nations' affairs. But it was those perceptions that manifested the actual influence. That is how the universe operates. So then, once the dominoes are falling in the US, the momentum of change will spread around the world to every nation, and ultimately all will have wise and just governing bodies and sound economies. In answer to a question about the Da Vinci Code, I noticed that there was a reference by Matthew to the Holy Grail, and he has said that the Holy Grail is the soul, and mentions how for two millennia the search has been going on for some object whose identity hasn't been agreed upon, but nothing fitting its ascribed power has been found. And he is referring, of course, to the Holy Grail. That's an interesting comment, I think. If you didn't already know, that reveals the answer to that mystery. Now, Matthew is talking here and saying there are different entities when referring to the names which are used, such as Creator and God. And in explanation, he is saying that the Creator is the supreme being of the cosmos and God, by whatever name, is supreme being of this universe, which is one of several in the cosmos. And he says, please notice that I didn't say separate, as in a statement made in the form of the question to which this is the answer. He says, just as every soul in the universe is an inseparable part of God, God is an inseparable part of Creator. And talking to his mother, to whom he has already mentioned that his message is concluded by one of Hatton, he says that, Mother, with the addition of Hatton's important and timely message, our space is more limited than usual, but this is such a vital area to be understood that I ask you to copy the book material that explains the difference. And he says, please save the other questions for the next message, since you have them ready. Perhaps we can do that in a week or so. So hopefully we will see another message from Matthew in that period of time. Now, Matthew proceeds on various subjects, and I take out small quotations such as, nothing is separate from the Creator. And he says that when the soul of Creator first divided itself, each of its fragments within the first sphere had the identical powers of Creator. Those fragments are the highest angels. There is no form within this sphere, first sphere in fact, only perfect light and purity. This is where the Christed energy generates, and where the paternal power called Archangel Michael, and the other archangels reside. And he says that during that time of pure awareness, Creator gave to all the angelic portions of itself the ultimate of gifts, free will, with its inherent power of co-creating ability. Thus, in the next expression, Creator and the archangels created the next level of angels, not as close to Creator mind as the archangels, but still collective light entities in purity, without form or substance. Then he mentions that in conjunction with the Creator, the angelic realms created the third sphere of being, life form potentials, that after timeless reflection, at will could be discarnate or could manifest in form. He goes on to say that forever greater experiencing, God's original beings, which are called root souls, express themselves into divisions called soul fragments, or soul sparks, or God fragments, or God sparks. Similarly and successively, those soul entities divided themselves into sparklets, who divided themselves into sub-sparklets. You'd need to read the whole answer to fully digest and understand what Matthew has had to say about that particular subject of the Creator and God. But I have to say, I've noticed that also in my own channeling, that there is a very distinct reference to the Creator, who I suppose might otherwise be called the Supreme God. And I also noticed that other entities are called God. So there seems to be a consistency in that way of referring to Creator as opposed to God. Now, Matthew was asked, do God and Creator differ in any way besides the size of their jurisdiction? And Matthew said there are two essential differences. God is in effect Creator for this universe. He is Creator mind in knowingness, Creator heart in love, Creator power and authority and responsibility for this universe. Thus, God is the sum of all universal intelligence, wisdom, knowledge and power, and there is no difference in its quality or extent from the very same Creator. He goes on to say that as total love and light in essence, God is the source of the love and light of our universe, and all of his creatures thrive because of this. The highest energy of light is love, a fluctuating, expanding, and contracting motion, ever increasing in its power to encompass more loving capacity and sensation. Love is infinite, and light cannot be captured, only directed. That is the essence of individual souls interacting with God. And he says that because life in all forms is of God and inseparable from him, it can be said that humans are made in his image by attributing to him his human creation. The idea of human appearance and the material of which physical bodies are made came from the mind of God. He goes on to say that on earth, free will is the order of life, wherein the hand of God is ever present in observation, but never in restriction. He talks of the second essential difference between Creator and God, and says that this is, whereas Creator is aware of each individual life throughout the cosmos, there is no standard for its involvement in the lives of the souls. God is not only aware of each soul's station in this universe, he knows all their heartaches, secret dreams, torments, joys, fears. All is known to God. Now I shall finish there as far as Matthew's message, and I will comment in part on Hatton's message, because that was most important. And he mentions that as Hatton, you may know of him as commander of an intergalactic fleet. And he quickly refers in his message to Nasara, and he said, I'm here to give a definitive statement in particular, but not exclusively, to all who have been working diligently to initiate Nasara's wide-reaching reforms and now don't know what to believe. And he says the National Economic Security and Reformation Act, and he says, please note this accurate name, is as real as anything else on earth. So to all skeptics, please put to rest the impression that is merely a wish in the minds of some who intensely desire a legislated remedy to your world's problems. And he goes on to say that they have had to put it within an acceptable legal framework. He talks of Nasara by saying that there is a great deal of disinformation about it, which has been promulgated by various sources to discredit the Act. And he said that isn't surprising because its provisions strip them of political and economic control over you. But it's unfortunate that Nasara has become better known through those means than the correct information from knowledgeable sources, such as Matthew. Approximately 2.5 years ago, we asked him to issue our collective statement that described Nasara as the divinely inspired co-creation of highly involved beings on and beyond Earth to engender goodwill among humankind and a fair share of good fortune for all. Food for the spirit is not enough for the majority of your population who are oppressed and deprived, and Nasara was born of Earth's desire for betterment in the lives of all her resident souls. Matthew speaks at some small length about Dove's incredible reports and comments that they changed about 2 years ago when it became evident from their higher vantage point that the control of the ones we call dark was sufficient to prevent Nasara's implementation well past the optimum universal timing. And he went on to say that to adhere with that time frame, we open new avenues to accomplish the identical aims of Nasara more slowly but with equally certain outcome. And in talking of Dove, he says that certain things have happened, and as a result of this, the consequence has been that incorrect information has been issued. He goes on to say that the energy of your belief that Nasara's objectives are being met, albeit on a parallel track, is as imperative now as before. He says, by be keenly discerning about all channeled messages, especially in this late phase of Earth's transition out of third density, knowing what is true and what is false is critical for your own sake. We urge you to look beyond the mass of muddled information about Nasara, Second Coming, First Contact, disastrous destruction to land masses, nuclear war potential, a dying planet. Listen to what your souls are telling you. And then he finally concludes this by saying, the concept and intent of Nasara is to help you create that world on Earth. You do not have to know of this act, or, if you do, you don't have to believe in its actuality. Wanting the same intentions that it embodies is what counts. It already has counted. He says, you're reading this in the early days of your year 2006, when wars, suffering, tyranny, corruption, and the like can be seen wherever you look. But in this very same instant, in the continuum, where everything is now, Earth is peaceful and beautiful, and all of that negativity is gone. She has reached her chosen destination where low vibration manifestations don't exist. The world of your vision, the future world you are helping to create right now, already is. So I think it's wonderful, very encouraging message there, and it tells us just to keep on doing what we're doing and help to manifest the benefits of Nasara, even if they don't come out in the form that was or initially envisaged. Now I'd like to come to a quick resume of my own messages. So we have a full week now. And last Friday I had Atmos through. Sorry, not last Friday, last Saturday. And he was saying that light workers are being protected and that each one has a lifetime guide. And that light workers' light attracts all kinds of entities, sometimes those stranded upon Earth. And where people allow themselves to be affected by the influence of drugs or alcohol, these lower entities will take off, or rather take over, their bodies. So he's saying, protect yourself with a ray of high vibration. And he's suggesting possibly the golden ray. And mentioning that you can also call on your personal guide or master. And that in the high dimension, you will come closer to others of a similar vibration as you rise up. And he's saying, keep your eyes on ascension. And reminding us that we will ascend with a different body. And this one will have no imperfections. He mentions finally that the new year is a time of great change. And that we are to reclaim that which has been taken from us for hundreds, if not thousands of years. On Monday, I had Saint Germain, and he was talking about the final acts of duality, and mentioning that the dark also know the plan for Earth and humanity. That 2006 would be one of many changes that will enable the last cabal to be removed. And he says it is the year of many changes. Also, accept that we have a creator, and asking us to give power to our vision of events that will see the end to the cycle of dark and light. And he said that you will grow rapidly into super consciousness. On Tuesday I had one of my ET contacts, Salusar, who was warning against the recommencing of underground testing of nuclear weapons. And he said that they have a brief to prevent the use of such weapons, and they have previously warned our leaders about it. He talks about times that are very reminiscent of the end times of Atlantis, and he comments on the fact that people have shown their compassion as a result of the tsunami and the effects of Katrina. He says this year is one of completion. Some will make that permanent step into the light. On Wednesday, I had Atmos, and he said that matters on Earth are proceeding in a predictable way, and that there is now more openness amongst people, and they're not sitting back any longer, and they're becoming more active. He mentions that the ETs will have to come to put the environment right. It's reached a point where, had it not been for their help in previous years, it would have been one of no return. Talking of souls who hadn't yet made their decision to make a pathway towards ascension, he reminds us that it is never too late for any soul to direct their energies towards him. He talks of first contact, the return of the Masters and the Sahara, saying that they are all linked together, and this year will be an exciting and hectic time for many. He talks about our being out of the body during our sleep state, and mentioning that we meet ETs and have meetings and discussions, but when we return to Earth in normal events, that is veiled from our waking consciousness. And he mentions that the third dimension is not the true home for many of us. He says you are fifth dimensional, and that many have connections with ETs. On Thursday, I had Aga Greer come through, and he said, it is not written that the dark will succeed, and he asked us to concentrate on our evolution. And he said, chaos is around, but This is caused through the cleansing of the earth, and it is unavoidable. He says, fear is still the energy that is the most dangerous, and asks us to just let it pass by. He said, you are great beings. And he mentions that even the dark are helped to play their part in the end times. And he also goes on to say that this year will carry you forward with a quantum leap that will enable you to detach from the old energies. Finally today I had Saint Germain, and he talks of what we might know as the average person and comments that there are millions of them who have the potential to join the ascension process. He talks of free thought and how we can use that to review orthodox teachings. He talks of people's urge to know the truth about their existence and, most importantly, whether there is life after death. He asked a question about souls who have brought death upon themselves, and he answers that by saying that that is part of their life's plan. And he's saying that we will not find the true God of love if we believe that God in some ways is vengeful and punishes wrongdoers. Mentions that universal law is not used to punish people, and that whilst we are responsible for our actions, it is us who decide how we will make our amendments and put that right. He's saying that hell is not exactly as we visualize. It is one of a lower vibration where matter does not hold its shape, and mentions that this results in the lack of color and light that are also associated with these realms. Right, I'm going to leave my own messages there, and I now come to my UFO part of the program, and as usual, regular listeners will know that I take this from older copies of the Flying Saucer Review, and this particular article, quite a long one actually, was about the strange case of the 1897 airship. Yes, 1897, not 1997. I know that there is evidence of UFO sightings going back a long time. In fact, it can be traced back to at least the Egyptian period. But in our more recent times, I think it's surprising to find some of these UFO instances which we can equate with. Now, there is reference in this article to the beginning of these sightings, which happened in November 1896 in Northern California. I guess it's possible that some people today can tell stories which have been handed down through their families, or something that was seen perhaps by a great-grandfather. Anyway, it goes on to talk of various sightings, and that in March 1897, airships reappeared, and this time they were all over the Midwestern and Western United States, and they were in large numbers, and in the presences of thousands of witnesses. The first recorded sighting, as far as they know, was made from Belleville, Kansas, on March 25, 1897. And there was a mysterious airship, which unfortunately was not described, which passed over the town and was seen by at least 50 citizens, at least according to newspaper accounts. And then it appeared on the two following nights as well. And there is a testimony from Robert Hibbard, who farmed 15 miles north of Sioux City, claiming that one night, late in March, an anchor hanging from a drag rope attached to the rear of an airship caught him in the slack of his trousers and dragged him several dozen feet. And when finally his trousers ripped, he said he fell to the ground. That's a rather odd one, isn't it? Anyway, I'll carry on and give you a few quotations of these different sightings, quite a few actually. And then it said that on the night of the 29th, worshippers leaving an Omaha, Nebraska church saw a strange object pass through the sky, hover and fly away again. It was visible to them for half an hour. And shortly thereafter, residents of the southeast portion of Omaha viewed the ship seeing a large bright light. They said too big for a balloon, travelling slowly and closely to the ground, and it disappeared in the northwest behind a series of bluffs just outside of the city. Apparently, some of the best reports were the result of a flap that occurred on April the 1st, and these sightings occurred in both Missouri and Kansas, and apparently thousands of people saw the mysterious light as it moved from west to north, north to south, then back to north, and its altitude varied. It would descend close to the ground, only then to rise rapidly away. And according to the Kansas City Times, it states, and I quote, "The light seemed about the size of a big street light and didn't seem to be as high as the clouds. It shot out a beam of light very much like a searchlight. Some of the time the light was white, and then it changed to a bright red. Its general course was towards the northwest, but several times it reversed and travelled for a while in the opposite direction. It moved with a regular motion." And citizens of Everest, Kansas, who also watched the airship for an hour and 20 minutes the same night, said that for 5 minutes at one time, the airship seemed to skirt the lowest edges of the cloud that hung low in the heavens. And it was then that the powerful lights on board were reflected on the clouds and the outlines of the ship were clearly distinguished. They said the basket or car seemed to be 25 to 30 feet long, shaped like an Indian canoe. Four light wings extended from the car. Two wings were triangular. A large dark hulk was discernible immediately above the car and was generally supposed by the watchers to be an inflated gas bag. That the same power that furnished the light was used for lifting the ship was evident from the fact that the lights grew dim as the ship went upward, that the lights grew brighter as the ship came nearer to the earth. One observer claimed a blue colour appeared, other than white and red. I think you have to bear in mind that that description would be relevant for an age in which, and I quote, that with certainty, the only airborne vehicles carrying passengers which could possibly have been seen anywhere in North America in 1897 were free flying spherical balloons, and it is highly unlikely for these to be mistaken for anything else. No form of dirigible, i.e. a gas bag propelled by an air screw, or heavier than air flying machine was flying, or indeed could fly at this time in America. And that was a quotation on a historical basis by someone of the Royal Aeronautical Society. So I wanted to mention that at that point because you may well have thought that there were airships in the sky. But I have a suspicion perhaps that people might have known about the potential of such an invention. There was another witness who said that he saw a long dark object carrying a very bright light on its end and flashing red lights along its sides. And apparently, two nights later, nearly 400 people in Norman claimed to have sighted an identical phenomenon. In another area, South Chicagoans watched the airship cross a lake, flying land, turn slowly to the northwest, and disappear in the darkness. And there are numerous sightings mentioned in this article of that kind, nothing extraordinary, but they keep confirming that there was obviously what we would now call a UFO flat at that time. Now, in another sighting in Chicago, the witnesses said that the phenomenon was about 8 to 10 feet in length and no more than 2 or 3 feet wide. And it was oblong in shape and carried a red light. Another said that the airship, whatever it was, dropped what looked like the parachute with a light attached to it. And some observers obviously thought that this might be a message from the craft's occupants and went out to retrieve it. But unfortunately, newspaper accounts do not say whether the searchers found anything. Another sighting from someone from Evanston said that he sighted red, green and white lights which reflected off two cigar-shaped bodies, and that the object or objects gave off a hissing sound. And this phenomenon, he emphasized, presumably with tongue-in-cheek, took a course entirely out of the route of Alpha Orionis. Now, I won't carry on with too many more of these sightings, but I like the reference here to someone who saw the craft. That was a half a dozen people, apparently in different cities, who said it was shaped like a Mexican cigar, large in the middle and small at both ends, with great wings, resembling those of enormous butterfly. It was brilliantly illuminated by the rays of two great searchlights and was sailing in a southeasterly direction with the velocity of wind, presenting a magnificent appearance. And so it goes on. And I don't intend to make any more extracts from that report. I think that's possibly enough on one subject. So what I would like to come to, and it's not very much of it as far as I can see, is any little interesting bits of what I call general news. And one bit that came out yesterday through the email is that the Carter City Council had made a 2006 New Year's resolution that demands impeachment or resignation of Bush and Cheney, and it's for violations of international and constitutional law. And one of the offences is the crime of ordering the secret surveillance of American citizens by the NSA without any court warrant. So that's interesting, because I did read at some stage earlier that the government thought that they had absolute authority to do that without getting a court warrant. So that is being taken to task. A couple of days ago, from Mike at whatreallyhappened.com, it was a very short email that gave a summary of the government winning court authorization to spy on cell phone use. And the summary read that despite three court rulings that cell phone tracking by government agencies without a court order is illegal, a fourth court ruling has now authorized blanket spying. And it said that the government can now use cell phone data to track physical location without a search warrant or probable cause. Well, I don't know what to think about that one, but there you are, there's something else that's going on. Apparently in the New York Times, in Washington, it confirms something I mentioned earlier in the program, that Jack Abramoff will plead guilty to three felony counts in Washington on Wednesday as part of a settlement with federal prosecutors, ending an intense months-long negotiation over whether the Republican lobbyist would testify against his former colleagues, people involved with the case. And it is said that Abramoff is
guilty to fraud, public corruption and tax evasion, setting the stage for prosecutors to begin using him as a cooperating witness against his former business and political colleagues. And it said that in exchange, he faces a maximum of about 10 years in prison in the Washington case. I could add there that I did read somewhere that if he hadn't, he would probably be in line for about 30 years in prison. Anyway, that's an interesting development. And I think that's going to be really earth-shaking when that comes out. There was a news update from what is called Citizens for Legitimate Government, and that is on the site legitgov.org. And it's telling us that the US are seeking dismissal of the Guantanamo lawsuits, and that the Bush administration wants federal judges to deny hearing habeas corpus petitions affecting at least 300 detainees, and that they're going to ask the federal trial judges to dismiss all lawsuits brought by the prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And these lawsuits are, of course, challenging their detentions. So the action means that the administration is moving swiftly to take advantage of an amendment to the military bill that President Bush signed into law last Friday. And that amendment strips the federal courts from hearing habeas corpus petitions from Guantanamo detainees. Well, dear me, justice is disappearing, I think, very quickly, to say the least. Now, the last bit of information I've got on general news is a report that came through Wayne Madsen, dated January the 2nd, and it's telling us that intelligence indications and warnings abound as the Bush administration finalizes military attack on Iran. And it says that intelligence and military sources in the United States and abroad are reporting on various factors that indicate a U.S. military hit on Iranian nuclear military installations that may involve tactical nuclear weapons is in the final stages of preparation. And they're talking of there likely to be saturation bombing of the nuclear power plant, a uranium mining site, a uranium enrichment facility, a heavy water plant, a radioisotope facility, and so on. And there we are. That is really a follow-on to news we've been hearing on and off, I think, for quite some months now about these preparations for war on Iran. So we'll leave the what we call the bad news behind and now come to some messages that have come from other channels this week. And Hatton has cropped up again through Nancy Tate. This was a message that came through on the 3rd of January. And he was commenting on the fact that that day marked the end of life as you know it. And he said this is the beginning of a whole new way of being and living on planet Earth. And I'll quote, he says, there is more that is going to come out in the next few weeks than many of you know. Secrets that have been kept from the public. And he's saying that the incident that determined the outcome of some of what you will be seeing at Christmas, as the world slept and the world awoke, in those hours there came a meeting of one of our ships that came to rest in an isolated place in South Africa, and envoys came to meet it from all parts of the globe. He said they were taken to a larger craft, comfortably seated, 132 delegates from Earth and their representatives, and they met to undertake a clearing that would clear the Earth of the ones who would seek to undermine the movements of the light. And he said the ones who met with ETs agreed to measures that would be taken around the globe, and that this would start with the US, and the plan would be distributed to all of the governments. Has a little ring about it, that message, and ties in with the one that Matthew has given us, I think. At least, I mean, the one that Patton sent through Matthew. So that's interesting again, very, very encouraging. There was another message from Nancy Tate this week, and the general subject of it mentioned, and I just quote this one sentence, or one intention, and that was that the government would be toppled. Now, on January the 1st, there was a long message sent through on the email, which was a welcome to the Source of Light channeled event at One Spirit Ranch. And the information apparently was coming from the Blue Star Nation and the Council Fire, which was being held at that moment, and the elders gathered, and they gave out various information, and they said that the cleansing and activation and manifestation on the very first day of the beginning of the co-creation on a global level with all light workers and new assignments, that is phase one, was completed, and that phase two begins in the building of community, one global family. And they said that in communities all over this planet, the energy grids are set. There was a channel from Owl Woman, and she said that the new and the ancient combining as one moment in time, the past is quickly dissolving, much has been dissolved already. And there were a few prophecies for January saying that we will see within our month of January many, many major accomplishments taking place with light workers in your government. As you see the old crumble, its power diffuse. Those that are ready to step forth in the correct heart of service to the planet will come forth, and no more will there be any waiting, no more will there be any holding back, no more will there be any struggle. There was another part of this message from Tawaka Wapitiya, and that's a mouthful to say, which apparently means sundown shining, who apparently is the last Hopi chief of the Bear Clan, the star nation of Pleiadians, sourcing from the planet. And in his message, he has said that many qualifications within your own psyche had to be clarified before you could step into the new medicine wheel. And that was one of complete surrender, meeting your aloneness, stepping into your own sovereignty, and then surrendering the I to be a we. He goes on to say that you have now stepped into a new circle, an activation of the crystalline grid with the platinum ray from Shambhala and the source of all that is, inpouring into every living being on this planet. He says that many times you have had many lives together, and you have been brought to this place each in your own individual way. You were led, and then you were connected, and that is because of the destiny that is to take place. The future destiny that was to take place is now here. It has arrived. Now, there were many parts of that message that if I had sufficient time, I would like to have quoted. It mentions that we are shifting consciousness, and talking of this year, that we will see many changes as to what we would say the funds from heaven start to pour in to accomplish all the work that needs to be done for all. There is enough, more than enough. There is never any running out. There is never any need to hoard. There is just continued give and know that as you do, you are blessed beyond measure. So, I will conclude that message there so that I've got time to get extracts from one or two others in. There was one from the Arcturians through Sal Rachel, and it said, suffice to say that what is given, whether from us or from another spiritual avenue, is exactly what you need when you need it. Your soul knows what you need. All knowledge is available all the time, but the specific information you need from time to time in your linear timeline is what is given. What is needed at this time is an understanding of the time period you are entering into on planet Earth. This is a time that has been spoken of for thousands of your Earth years. You have longed for this time. stranger this time. In your year 2006, every day brings you closer to a complete and final resolution of the many lifetimes of toil and struggle most of you have experienced. The golden age, or promised land, or land of milk and honey, or dawning of the age of enlightenment, or whatever you want to call it, is definitely at hand. This promise is contained within the very fiber of the universe. It is preordained within the fabric of time and space. It is a decree issued by the Godhead that all souls will eventually awaken to their true purpose and natural inheritance. It goes on to mention that the so-called burdens of everyday life are what is not real. Reality is the infinite abundance of your Creator. Reality is the unconditional love of life itself. Reality is the natural flow and harmony and effortless manifestation that so many of you have been asking for. And finally, all that is required to bring about the fulfillment of the prophecies is a willingness to embrace your true nature, your God self. You are gods that have fallen asleep and are dreaming of lack, limitation, and fear. These are illusions, beloved ones, illusions. Illusions are not real. They only appear real to the mind that believes in them. If you stop believing in lack and limitation, within a very short time, in earth years, these things will no longer be part of your reality. I found a slightly older message, again from Hatton, through Nancy Tate. That was just before the new year started. And one comment caught my eye, and he said that heaven is what you make of where you are. It is a state of mind, a state of bliss. And then also that there is no time in creation in the etheric. It is all right there at the moment. As soon as you have the thought, it is manifested. Now, there was another message that came through from the Arcturians, this time from Susan Carroll of multidimensions.com. And it was talking about the ego blending with the soul, saying that as your ego merges with your soul, you can easily remember that you can manifest anything you want to have by focusing your thoughts and emotions through your intention. It goes on to talk about the blending of the polarities of ego and soul, and that ego's personal desire cannot be used to harm or conflict with any other separate personal desire, as nothing and no one is separate. And it goes on to say that within the higher vibrations, you never have to work. All you have to do in order to achieve is to choose to calibrate your desires with your thoughts, feelings, and your soul's intention. Then you will instantly manifest a hologram of the reality that you choose to experience. When you are feeling completed with a particular hologram, you change your mind in order.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.